Okay, it's October 14th, 2016, in West Final One, looking at teaching according to the law of need. So this seminar is actually part of a seven-part series developed by Dr. Bruce Wilkinson. Dr. Wilkinson is a Christian, and what he did was he went through the Bible to see how does God teach and how does Jesus teach. And he developed a series of laws, seven laws for teaching based on that. I was able to hear him teach this in person twice. So it sounds still really bad. Is there anything we can do about this now? Yeah, it's been here, Dr. Wilkinson, in person twice. And I've also studied this seminar on deep. DVD. Maybe we'll just sit differently.
Okay, let's just, we also did this with our scriptures. I'd really like it if we would go through the Bhagavad Gita, and see how does Krishna teach? How does Narada Muni teach? How did Srila Prabhupada teach? How did Bhaktisiddhanta teach? And come up with our own system of education based on that. We did a few years ago do such an investigation with the Sri Ishopanishad. And we came up with a philosophy of education based on the Ishopanishad about how does one teach. I have taught this in many temples. I usually teach it as a seven-part series where we go through all of the laws. It was very nice in North Carolina, in America, and in London, where we did one theory, one practice, one theory, one practice on each law. How are all of you doing with my English? Are you all right with my English? My problem is that it's now 3 o'clock. And if I go very slowly, there is no way that we are going to finish on time. So I hope that you can follow. Everybody's okay? A little better with the speak with the microphone? All right? I do apologize if sometimes it will be a little too fast for you. I'll do my best. So what is the one word you would use to describe school or most of the classes in your life? What would you say? One word.
Education.
Learning.
No, your experience of it. One word to describe your experience, your general experience in school.
Fun.
You had fun.
Growing up?
Really?
Sometimes boring.
Sometimes boring. Usually where I teach is everybody just says boring.
School means friends.
Learning. School means friends. But the learning in school. What was the learning in school like mostly?
They learned everything. They learned good and bad.
That's very interesting. I've taught this many places. Everybody always says boring. This is the first time anyone said fun. So usually in school we find learning to be boring. Or is that not your experience?
Yes, college boring.
If you didn't find school boring, then I will teach a different seminar. Did you find mostly school is boring?
Some parts were good.
Yeah,
some parts are good.
Some subjects are good. Some.
I had maybe, you know, in all my years of schooling, a few good teachers, maybe five. So if you want to catch a butterfly, what will you do? Well, you could try a net. Do we sometimes feel that trying to catch our students' interest is like this? So instead, if you want to catch a butterfly, you have to get out some nectar. Then they will come to you. Often what we do in schools is we are trying to go and capture them instead of having them come to us. So what we're going to be doing today is how to get your students so eager for what you have to teach them that they are coming to you. They are begging you to learn what you have to teach instead of you having to try to. And most of our discipline problems are because the students don't want to learn what we are teaching. If you want to learn what someone is teaching, you will not be a discipline problem. Does that make sense to everybody? So this is how we want the students to feel in our classes. Maybe actually we could put the computer. Can we get this box out? Whole thing out of here. Yeah. Oh my God. Is it that heavy? Look at those strong devotees. Oh, that's so much better. I had this like wall between me and all of you. This is how we want the students to feel during our class. What is this? Tell me more. I want this. Oh, I need this. I got what I needed. So this is how we want students to feel when we are teaching. Every class. Everything we do with them. This is how we want them to feel as we're going through the teaching. So, what is this? They should sort of think, what is this? What is this going to be about? They should have some curiosity. And okay, I want to know more about this. This sounds exciting. Could you tell me more? Then they should feel, I really want this. And then that goes to, I really need this. And at the end, I got what I want. I got what I needed. I am satisfied. Okay, what does that look like from the teacher's perspective? So for the student to feel, what is this? We need to capture their attention. Now this is true with any audience, but it's especially true with children. By the way, is it becoming harder or easier to capture the attention of children? Much harder. Because why? The children are being exposed to media, which is very fancy and always shifting and changing colors. And
highly distracted.
Highly distracted. They're becoming highly distracted. Modern media is exactly the opposite of a meditative mind. Completely the opposite. Meditative mind is a mind at peace in the mode of goodness. Modern media pushes you to a mind in passion and ignorance. Modern media increases the jumping of the mind. You understand? Pictures always jumping. And so much fancy technology, it's very hard to compete with it. Yes? So to get people's attention, so they go, what is this? Then to stir their curiosity, so they're thinking, I want to know more. And then you stimulate their felt needs, which we'll go over how to do this. This is when they say, I want this. So a felt need might be, I want to go play with my friends. If that's what the children are feeling that they need. Then surfacing the real need. The real need is, I want a friendly community and fun. But they're not thinking, I want a friendly community and fun. They're thinking, I want to play with my friends. Then to satisfy their real need. So this is the relationship between what the... Looks pretty good on that screen. This is the relationship between what your students should experience and what you will be doing. Okay, our first point is that building the need is the responsibility of the teacher. Now, many, many teachers believe that it's somehow already decided by somebody, somewhere, somehow, that what they are teaching is important to the students. And so it's not their responsibility to make a connection between what the students feel they need and what's being taught. They think their responsibility begins and ends at teaching the material. If the students care, if the students learn, is not their responsibility. You've experienced this? Yes? They expect the students to come in already hungry for what they're giving. However, a maxim here is that it is the teacher's responsibility to make the children hungry or make the children aware of their hunger for what's being taught. If what we're teaching meets a legitimate need of our students, And if it doesn't meet a legitimate need of our students, should we be teaching it? This is a radical idea to some people. If what we're teaching does not meet a legitimate idea of our need of our students, should we be teaching it? No. If it does meet a legitimate need of our students, the students may not be aware of what legitimate need of theirs it is meeting. If you just simply get the children to memorize a Sanskrit sloka, I want to play with my friends, and why do I have to be here? If they don't see the connection between what they care about and what they need and what you're teaching, they won't be hungry for what you're teaching. So if there is a connection between what they need and what we're teaching, it is our responsibility, not theirs, to make that connection. Now that's true even when you're teaching adults. What to speak of when you're teaching children? When you're teaching adults, usually the adults have voluntarily decided to come to your class because they already have some idea that they probably need and want what you are teaching. With the children, it's not like that. Their parents have told them, you have to go to this class. If your children start leaving as soon as they get old enough to say no, then you probably have this problem. Could be other things. Could be their life gets very busy. Need meeting is the teacher's primary calling. Calling means your vocation, your duty, your service. We may think that our main service is to teach the material. No, that's not our main service. Our main service is to meet the legitimate spiritual needs of our students. Now, many times the teachers teach something to meet their own needs. Or they're teaching Shastra instead of teaching children. So are you teaching people or are you teaching the subject? You understand? It's a big difference. Am I simply covering the material in the syllabus? And I've taught this thing in the syllabus, and I've taught Shastra, or have I changed the lives of my students? With one of them, you say, okay, I did this, I did this, I did this, I did this, it's done. I've done my job, I've done my service. And the other is, am I really meeting the needs of my students? The main way we motivate anybody to learn anything is by showing them the connection between what we are teaching and their need. So you are all here, hopefully, not just because you were told to be here, but hopefully because you feel a need to have your students engaged in what you're teaching them, correct? That's why you're sitting here. You could be doing so many other things. Perhaps those other things are more boring than me, just like cleaning your kitchen or something, but hopefully you actually have this need. That you're there as the teacher and you see some of the students are not engaged and they're discipline problems and you're working very hard to try to get them to pay attention and you're thinking, I really need some way that I can motivate my students. So having this relationship between what you're teaching and what your students actually need, that is your main service. When we learn something that meets our needs, do you think we forget it? And tomorrow we're going to be talking about teaching for application from the same series. We'll be talking about how to teach so the children will apply what you're teaching. So many times our teaching may feel like this. Our children want one thing and we are trying to push them away from what they want to something else. Whereas actually teaching should be like this, except the donkey should actually eat the apple eventually. Now, we only, if this is all you get, if this is the only thing you remember from what we're doing today, you only motivate people with their needs if they feel it. Intellectually isn't enough. If you just simply say, all of you would like to have better motivated students, so that's what we're going to learn today. That isn't enough. You have to feel it. You have to go back in your mind to the last time you were in front of a classroom and you had half the kids were like this and how you felt in order for that to motivate you to pay attention to what I'm teaching. Okay? You have to feel it. I remember last time I was trying to get some kid to listen to me and get some kid to do what I wanted them to do, and I was just felt like I was going uphill. You have to feel that. It's got to be felt. Whenever you have new content, you have to build the need. Whenever you teach new content, you have to build the need. At least every new series. And a little bit at the beginning of each lesson. At the end of the class, you build the need for the next class. So I know many of you were at my Manashiksha seminars. Did you notice at the end of the class, I would build the need for the next class? Yes. You notice that I did that? Did you notice at the beginning that I tried to build the need for the class? The beginning of each class, at the end for the next class, and the beginning of each major unit or lesson. Now this should be according to the specific audience that you're teaching. Because although there's universal human needs, they're not going to be exactly the same in each community or each age group or each group of people. Now sometimes there are factors beyond your control. Our greatest physiological need is for what? What is our greatest physiological need? Our greatest bodily need, what is it?
Food, clothing, shelter.
For the main one.
Food.
No, we can live that food for 20 days. Air! What is the next one?
Water.
No, you can go with that water for at least 3 days, sometimes up to 10 days. What is our greatest need after air? Nobody ever guesses. It's temperature. Our greatest bodily, physiological need is for air, and our next greatest need is for temperature. If the temperature is much too hot or much too cold, we can't function. So if there's a problem with air or temperature in the room, the bodily needs may be so great that nobody can hear what you're saying. You may also have a problem, and I had a problem with this at one temple. The temple was very hot and very stuffy. And I was always telling the temple president, you know, there's a problem here. And finally one day somebody donated an AC unit. And everybody was, then they said, someone's donated an AC unit. Everybody was cheering. And the temple president came up to me after, he said, you were right. I said, I was trying to tell you for 5 years. The other things which may hinder need building is if there's something else going on in people's lives. So I always tell people, if a child who's normally well behaved is suddenly not well behaved, they are probably hungry or tired or sick, or there's some problem in the home. If there's a problem in the home, you know, if parents are getting a divorce, the child will have a very hard time attending class, sometimes for many months, that they just, you're not there. You understand? Or if a parent is very sick, or a parent has just died, you know, or a parent is going to go to another country for a year, something like this makes it very difficult to connect with the student. So sometimes there are external factors. If there was some crisis in the community, somebody has died, or some scandal, so this may make it very hard. Do you all understand that?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, is there anything you want to discuss now before we go into how? Anything before we go into the practical of how? Okay, this is our method. Step one, find out what your students need. Don't assume. So in America, we have a saying, assume is A-S-S-U-M-E. So we say, when you assume, you make an ass of you and me. So don't assume. Assume is Atmavan Manyate Jiga. I think everyone is like me. Or, you know, I have one child. I notice many of you only have one child. It's a popular thing. So after three generations, no uncles, no aunts, no cousins, no brothers, no sisters. Family finished. So, you know, if you only have one child, and your child has certain needs, you think everybody's children also has the same needs. You understand? And you may not even know your own child's needs that way. Depends what your relationship is. So we think, you know, I know what everyone's needs are, but we may not. So how are we going to find out what people actually need? So one way, that's all right, the children don't bother me at all. It's fine. And hopefully, if you're all teachers of children, they don't bother you. So one way we find out what people's needs are is just very directly. Ask, what are the biggest problems you're facing? List two or three areas in your life you wish we would address. What would you like us to talk about? Now, I've done this many times with adult groups. I'll pass around pieces of paper and I'll say you don't put your name on it and you just write answers to these questions. And then you pass it up. Because many times people don't want to discuss what's really bothering them. And you want to have open-ended questions. So I'll ask people things such as, you know, what are your greatest doubts in Krishna consciousness? What aspect of Krishna consciousness are you having the most difficulty following? Things like that, that nobody wants to talk about. And I'll say, write it down. So you can do this with your children also. That you ask them, what are the problems in your life? What's going on now? And you can have low-key. Low-key means without pressure. So these are questions, obviously, for adults instead of for children. But these are kind of questions you can ask people. You can send out a survey. This is very useful also to do with the adults. I find in our Hare Krishna movement, many times there's classes given that have nothing to do with my life at all. Is this a group experience? It's a nice class, but it doesn't help me with any of my real questions. Have you experienced this? Yes? This is what I'm talking about, doing like an anonymous questionnaire on cards. The biggest problem in my life is the Krishna conscious practice I have the most problem with is, I also struggle with, when I get depressed is, my greatest worry in life. It's not something you're going to do every day or every class, maybe like once or twice in a year, but to find out what's really going on. And again, I want to emphasize, it may be different than what you think is going on. And what my answers to this may be, may not be the same as your answers. Does that make sense? What I find very easy in Krishna consciousness may be a big struggle for you, and what's a big struggle for you may be something you find very easy. Also, through interaction with family members, you can find out what people's needs are. Personal visits to students' homes give you some idea of what their needs are. And then observing your students. I think many times we don't really observe our students enough. We're so preoccupied with teaching the material that we're not paying attention to them as persons. We have a very personalistic philosophy, very individual philosophy, but we don't always behave as if we believe that philosophy. If we really believe that we're all individuals and we're all persons, then we will interact with other individuals in a very personal way. Everybody following this? Yeah. We can say, all right, we know there are some general needs and concerns in the community in Moscow. That's probably true. But they're also going to be individual concerns. Those are direct methods. These are indirect methods. What are people reading nowadays? Of course, this is a little bit more difficult as people's reading become more and more online. It's a little harder to tell what people are reading. But what are the books that people are reading? What are the magazines and newspapers that they're reading? I mean, it could also be a poll. What are people reading? This shows what their interests are. Then looking at research studies and polls in general, and then asking other people who interact with the public that you're teaching. Talking to the teachers of your students, you know, talking to people in general that may interact. So you want to have a need inventory for your audience. You want to have a list that you update maybe, you know, a couple times a year, maybe three times a year, of what are the needs in your community? What are the needs of the people that you're teaching? And of course, that will be different for the adults and the children and different ages of children. And again, some you might assume, well, as the children get older, they're worried about exams, they're worried about where they're going to study. I mean, I understand a lot of the older children here, the youth, they don't stay here to study, right? They go someplace else to study. And that must be an anxiety for them, you know, to go away from their parents, and even though they're going back to India, which is their country, but yet this is their country. You follow? That's like, that's sort of their country and this sort of it, especially if they've been brought up here. And, you know, the culture in India is not quite the same as the culture in Oman. It's a different culture. Different way of behaving. So I'm sure they have some anxieties over that, anxieties over grades and so forth. But what are the things that concern them? Okay. For everything you're going to teach, you want to focus on one need. Don't try to solve everybody's problems with every single class. I mean, it's a fact that if we were to fall in love with Krishna and realize that we're a soul, all of our problems would be solved. So you may get lucky and one of your students may become a fully self-realized person in the middle of one of your classes. But in general, in planning our teaching, we want to focus on one need. Like, the one need I'm focusing on in this class is how to have your students engage with what you're teaching. I'm not focusing on other needs. I'm not looking at how are you going to be organized, how are you going to balance your teaching and your family responsibilities. We're not looking at that, although I'm sure those are also your needs. I'm looking at simply your need to have the children that you teach engaged in what you're teaching. Is that clear? That's all I'm focusing on. So that the children and the youth that you teach will say, I can't miss that class. I don't care, you know, my favorite cricket team's on the television, I have to go to that class. So that's the only need I'm focusing on for this particular class. Okay, step three, forecast the need or prepare for your class. So how are you going to get this beginning of, what is that? Tell me more. What is that? Tell me more. So how you prepare is you think about, well, if people had this need met, what would it be like? And if they don't have the need met, what would it be like? So if you have this need met and people were, you know, the youth and the children were so eager to come to your class that they weren't going to watch the cricket game, what would that be like? And what's it like if it's not met? How, you know, you really wonder, is it worthwhile for me to do this? It's tiring. It may be draining. It may be more difficult for you. You know, you also feel, well, maybe I have other things I'd rather be doing. So for me as the teacher, I look at, okay, what's it like if my students, who are all of you right now, that's just right now, you're not my students all the time. What would it be like if my students had their need met? And what would it be like if they don't have their need met? Then you want to have people feel that need and meet the need. Let's look at a little chart to make this clear. So at least once a year, I would say maybe two or three times a year, at least once a year, identify what are the needs of the people that you teach. Do not assume. So at least a year, make an effort to identify the needs of the people that you're teaching. So that would mean generally the children and the youth that you're teaching, and specifically the students who are in your particular class. Then regularly isolate particular needs that you are going to meet in your teaching. Before every single class, imagine what it would be like if everyone had their needs met, or if everyone didn't have their needs met. So this morning I taught a class on chanting. So I'm very aware that a lot of devotees feel a need to go deeper into their chant. It's one of the most frequently asked questions that I encounter. How can I improve my chant? Whether it's just finishing your 16 rounds altogether, or really relishing your chanting, or feeling your chanting with quality. I know that that need exists. All right? So you imagine, what would it be like as the teacher? This is what the teacher does. You imagine, what would it be like if everybody was really inspired in their chanting? Then what do in class? You're going to inspire and have people feel the need. And then you see, okay, seizing their attention, stirring their curiosity, stimulating their felt need, surfacing their real need. Now, it's not going to be fully met until after the class. So somewhat in the class, you're going to be instructing people how to fulfill their need. But that's also going to be fully filled as they apply what you've taught out of the class. Now, we don't want to be very future-oriented, because that's the mode of passion. We do also want to be very present-oriented. So at least to some extent, your students should feel... What are you doing? Are you trying to sneak? Oh, is there something over there you want? No? Trying to sneak very slowly over there? They should feel, at least to some extent, in the class, that they're getting their needs met. Do you follow? Everybody understand this? Yes? No?
Yes.
Some of you look like what we call a deer in the headlights. Is this clear or not? Does anyone have any questions so far? Yes.
When we're talking about this need, what are we really referring to? We're referring to the spiritual need, because their needs are
very good question. So we talked about the felt need and the real need. Our real needs are all spiritual. We don't generally experience our spiritual needs. We're not usually aware of our spiritual needs. Most people in the world, even I would say most members of the Hare Krishna movement, do not wake up in the morning and say, I haven't been thinking about Krishna enough. I'm not in love with Krishna enough. That's not usually what we worry about. That would be lovely. But that's not generally what it is. People are waking up thinking, how can I get breakfast ready for everybody to go to school on time? How am I going to get my rounds done later in the day? I have some bill we have to pay. You know, my husband might lose his job. How is my kid going to do well in school? My kid doesn't have good grades. I mean, I've been traveling now pretty much constantly for 10 years. So many thousands of people come to me with their problems. It is so rare that someone comes to me and says, Urmila, tell me how I can fall in love with Krishna more. It is very unusual. It happens, but it's very unusual. People usually ask me, you know, I'm struggling with following the principles, I'm sure you can guess which one, or I'm struggling with a relationship with someone, I'm having a difficulty with my spouse or with my child, or with my temple president, or with my guru, or with some godbrother or godsister? Those are very big questions. You know, I'm struggling with my chanting japa is another big one. Or I have some big philosophical doubt. How do I balance my material and spiritual lives? Which often is a question about time prioritization. These are the questions that people ask. These are the things that are right at them. And those have some relationship to Krishna consciousness. They have some relationship to spiritual needs. But they're not directly spiritual needs. You know, people don't usually come and say, how can I love my enemies? It's not a very common question. You understand? It's just not. So most of us, even if we're devotees, even if we're initiated, second initiated, the sad reality is our felt needs are usually very different. Somebody's angry with me, how can I deal with them? I have something difficult to tell somebody, how can I tell them? Right? This is what we're... Or I have a health problem, I don't know what it is. I don't have a good diagnosis, I'm scared. Or some family member is sick, or some family member is dying. These are the things. So what you want to do, when we say here, stimulate the felt need, right here. Okay? That means what you want to bring out is what people are already feeling. But they may not be feeling it that moment. So I tried to bring out in you that you want your students to be engaged. Now you might not have been feeling that this moment. So I needed to bring that out. And you all, yes, we feel that way. I got it pretty much, I mean some of you are still kind of like this. But for most of you, I got some sort of a body language reciprocation that you actually care about that. But please tell me, what is the real need? The real need is not to have your students engaged during your class. The real need is what? What is the real need underneath, I want my students to be enlivened and motivated in my class? Be specific. What is the real spiritual need? What do you need?
Caring.
Yes, you need a relationship of caring. What else?
Cultivation.
To help others, to cultivate others, to contribute to others' happiness. That is an actual spiritual need. What other spiritual need do we have?
To develop love for Krishna.
As far as getting your students to be attentive in your class, what spiritual need does that indicate? Caring, we said that. Caring, helping others, what else?
Heart to heart touch,
connecting. We all have a deep spiritual need to be connected with everybody, actually. So we're understanding it as, you know, I've got a discipline problem, my kids aren't paying attention, they don't want to come to class, they're fooling around, they don't remember anything. That's what we feel our need is, but that's not actually what our need is. What our real need is to connect, to help others. Also, to have meaning. It's also a need for meaning. To feel that what we're doing has some meaning. If I'm teaching people something and they don't pay any attention, and they forget what I taught them, and then they don't come as soon as they're old enough to make up their own mind, then I think, oh, what I'm doing is useless. It has no value. So these are spiritual needs. Does this make sense to everyone?
Yes.
However, if you go right to the spiritual need, you won't catch people. If you go right to, you know, we all have a need to connect with our students. Right? Connecting with my students is just fine. You follow? If I say, no, we really have a need for security in our life. I have security in my life. But we say we worry about money. Okay, yeah, I worry about money. What is worrying about money? It's a need for security. You follow? But if I say, all of you have a need for security, you're like, who does she think she is? I don't have a need for security. I feel perfectly secure. Do you follow? Yes? Everybody is clear about this? So if you just, in the beginning, say we need to feel what we're doing is valuable? Of course it's valuable. So we bring out the felt need. Then you have to segue from the felt need to the real need. So Lord Kapila Dev says that, we were talking in our Amanashiksha presentations, that you use the mind to capture the Lord. Do any of you remember that from yesterday night with the meditation? You remember that? And he said you use the mind to capture the Lord like you use a what? Do you remember there was a picture?
Fish.
A fish, good. The Lord himself is saying this. He says when we use our mind to meditate on the Lord, it's like catching a fish. But when you catch a fish, does someone just put a hook in the water? Do they just put a hook?
No,
they put something on the hook. You don't just put a hook. So if you go to people, they're not bothering me. They're not going to be interested in this, and so it's going to be very difficult to get them to behave. Children have, they have a dharma. One dharma is to be noisy, another dharma is to make a mess. If they're not doing those things, either they're not really children, or they're really, really in trouble. Right? Quiet children are scary. Not when they're older, but little children. Yes, you all found that out with your first child? Oh, they're so quiet. Very good. I will clean the kitchen. Okay. So you put something on the hook. So if you go to people, when I was first distributing Prabhupada's books, I was taking back to Gaudiya, and we were wearing saris that weren't saris because nobody went to India. And in America in those days, there were hardly any Indians. There were no Hindu temples in America when Prabhupada came. None. America had strict immigration policies until 1965. With Asians. There were no Indian shops, there were no Hindu temples, so there were no saris. We would go to a fabric store and we bought heavy, heavy polycotton saffron cloth. And everybody wore saffron. When you got married, you were white. Ladies also. So unmarried ladies wore saffron and married ladies wore white. And it was very, very heavy polycotton cloth and very long also. And we were told, if you are chased, you will have more pleats. So we had 25 pleats, like from here to here. And it was very heavy, heavy fabric. And so it was tucked in about this much. And it was very heavy, so it was mostly dragging. So we had a little gray border on the side. And then, because it was so heavy, you couldn't keep it on your head. So we would pin it here, with a pin, safety pin here. And because the fabric was heavy, it would move. So it would look like this. At least in those days, they didn't worry about Muslim terrorists, so they would throw in the Muslims. And then we would wear big nose rings. I mean, big, big. I had one nose ring, really, this big. And I'm not kidding or exaggerating at all. And I had to have a chain up to my ear to keep it from flopping. And then big tilak. So just imagine that we were going like this. Seriously, in America, okay? And we're going like this to the airport with our Back to Godhead magazines, and we're running up to people and say, here, take this book about love of God. So not very many people were interested in getting a book about love of God from this very strange looking person. And we were selling for like 25 cents, you know, for a magazine. So generally, if you just go to people immediately and say, here, this is about love of God, they're not very interested. And then some of the devotees, actually, Tarani's other grandmother, Nilapakriti, Chipurari, Pragosh, they came and they taught us. Then we started wearing just like long skirts and jackets. And then we'd say things like, oh, what are you interested in? Oh, I study psychology. Oh, this book is all about psychology. So instead of going right to the real need of love of God, because people are not waking up in the morning saying, I want to fall in love with God. So you stimulate the need that people are feeling. And then you bring it to the real one. All right, so we looked at identifying, like once, twice, three times a year, isolating the need regularly, imagining what is why people get it met or not, inspiring and instructing. And again, this is the relationship between identifying, isolating, imagining, inspiring, instructing, and what is this, I want this, I need this, I got what I want. Okay, how do we stir the felt need? One way you can do that is with graphs. That these are indications of how many people are reading or how many people are getting married. And then people think, oh, yes, this is a problem I care about. You follow? Yes? Suppose we were going to give a talk on how to help your grown-up children find a good spouse. So we might start off with a graph like this about how fewer and fewer people are getting married. And then people feel, all of a sudden their need comes out. Oh, this is a problem. Do you have your phone?
To relate to.
Yes. So if we're going to be talking to book distributors, how are we going to distribute books? And we may have this graph about how fewer and fewer people are reading books. You can also do it through storytelling. So just like the Bhagavad Gita is full of stories, right? Yes? And those stories bring out our own needs. Dhruva had this need for respect. He had a need to have a relationship with his father. So if we're going to teach people about relationships and respect, we might start with that story.
This is real need, expressing the real need.
No, this is felt. This is all bringing out the felt need. And you can do it through drama. You can start out with a drama. You can even dramatize yourself. Music is a big one. I mean, one reason that we start our classes often with music or with bhajans. Now, of course, it's a problem if we don't understand the language of the bhajan. So, you know, if everybody speaks Telugu and Tamil and Hindi and we're singing a Bengali bhajan, it may just be words to people. It may just be sounds to people. But if you have music that deals with the need that you want to bring up, then singing that song that is similar to the need can also bring out that need. I mean, we did a little exercise where, right, with songs yesterday. But like in Manashiksha Bhakti, you know, Thakur has a song for each verse. And if we had the time to really sing each of those songs and sing them in the Bengali and then maybe go through them in the English, and as you sing the songs in music, it brings out your own need. Have you experienced this? That certain songs, they bring out your own. Yes, I also have this longing. Sometimes with a diagram. Or sometimes with a picture. It's like if you want to talk about frustration, this nice song, this nice picture of the girl, about our frustration of material desires. Okay, summary. How we're going to bring out people's desires for what we're teaching, factual presentations, stories, drama, delivery, music, diagram, pictures. And we're going to look at a very specific example from the Shastra, which I hope you're all familiar with. And hopefully we'll have time to do an exercise. Unfortunately, because of our technological difficulties, we have a very late start. So how did Narada Muni get Magrari the hunter to think, what is this? He says, I was wondering whether all the boars and other animals that are half killed belong to you. The hunter replied, yes, what you were saying is so. Why did you not kill the animals completely? Why did you half kill them? By piercing their bodies with arrows. That got his attention. I have one thing to beg of you. You may take whatever animals or anything else you would like. I have many skins. If you'd like them, I'd give you a deer skin or a tiger skin. So Narada Muni is getting the attention of this hunter with these questions. The hunter's thinking, oh, what is this about? There's some interest. Now, this interest only lasts for a minute or two. So then you have to stir the curiosity to tell me more. He says, I don't want any of your skins. I only want one thing for you. Please kill the animals completely instead of half dead. So now the hunter was really curious. He said, why are you asking this? Do you think anyone else ever asked this of him? No. He was a hunter. This is, he made his living by selling animal skins. So people who asked him for things asked him for a skin. Can I have a tiger skin? Can I have a deer skin? Can I have a boar skin? Nobody asked him to kill the animals completely. So now he's really curious. So in the beginning he's a little into, what is this? Now he's out. Tell me more. I want to know more about this. Okay, and I'm sorry, there's a lot of text here, but I wanted one subject per slide. He said, if you leave the animals half dead, you are purposely giving them pain, therefore you will have to suffer. Your business is killing animals. That is a slight offense on your part. But when you consciously give them unnecessary pain by leaving them half dead, you incur very great sins. Now that's interesting, isn't it? Isn't that interesting? Narada Muni is a very interesting and empowered preacher. Probably most of us would just go to this Magori and say, stop killing animals, you idiot. Narada Muni doesn't do that. He says, oh, are these your animals? Why are they half dead? Can I have a favor? Sure, take whatever skin you want, dear sadhu. No, I want you to completely kill the animals. Would you expect a sadhu to say that? No. So he really became curious. And now he's giving him a reason. He said, you know, if you completely kill the animals, that's not so bad. You're a hunter. Okay. But half killing them, it's not necessary to completely kill them for your job. That's necessary. To half kill them is not necessary. And this unnecessary pain is going to give you great suffering. All these animals will come after you in your next life. Yes. So then the hunter became, it says, a little convinced. He became somewhat afraid. Little convinced, somewhat afraid. So he's gone from, what is this, to tell me more, to wait a minute, I think I want this. Something here is intriguing me. He said, I've been taught this way from my childhood, but now I'm wondering if there's something I can do to be free of this. Narada Muni says, if you listen to my instructions, I will find a way for you to be free of this. So now he's feeling, I really need this. Now, of course, Narada Muni also used a little trick, and then he showed him a vision of the animals he had killed who were going to attack him in another lifetime. So it wasn't just words. He had a whole dramatic visual display. So then the hunter says, yes, now he's in the mood of, I really need this. You see, if Narada Muni had just come to him and said, stop killing animals, would the hunter have listened? No. So he took him through these steps, and now the hunter says, I'll do whatever you want. And Narada Muni says, before I tell you what you have to do, you have to break your bow. And the hunter says, then how will I live? So his curiosity and his hunger is increasing at each step. He really wants this, but he's afraid. How will I do this? Then Narada satisfies his need. Don't worry, I'll give you whatever you want. Then the hunter broke his bow and surrendered to Narada Muni. Okay, let's do a practice. I'm going to just pick a felt need here in the interest of time. So most people that I know have a felt need of how can I organize my time to get done what I want to get done. How many of you have that need? Okay, that's pretty common. It's pretty common. Okay, so remember we talked about putting something on the hook. So this is, you want to get this bait, this hook in the beginning. So So I'd like you just, again, we don't have, when is everybody else coming?
Yeah, I know it's 4 o'clock, but they won't,
Okay. And see, that was what I was told on day one of Manashiksha, and then I was late. I was told, we have announced 8, but you don't need to come until 8:30. And then so many people were upset with me. Why were you late? I was just following orders. Okay. Do you all have paper? Everybody, how many people have something to write on and something to write with? Okay. Maybe you could, somebody could maybe share some paper with a few people in the back. If you have a phone, that'll work too. Okay, I don't think we have time for 10. Why don't you do at least 3 to 5? So if a person, or yourself, or anybody, you can make it about someone else if you like. If a person could organize their time to get done what they wanted to get done, what kind of things would they be thinking, feeling, or doing? And if they couldn't do it, what kind of things would they be thinking, feeling, or doing? So 2 comments. Maybe just 3 to 5. I don't think we have time for 10. If you were organized to get things done that you want to get done, what would you be thinking, what would you be feeling, what would you be doing? If a person was not organized, what would they be thinking, what would they be feeling, what would they be doing?